We ran into a situation where if you're too fast coming back with the alternative, the solution, the idea, you don't have the person at the right pitch to buy. My experience, and we've got some folks in the room who've been in the business a while, is that if somebody really understands their problem, they are very anxious for a solution. And so I spend a lot less time on what the solution is about than I am on getting them to accept the nature or communicate the nature of the problem so that I can come back and we can together work on a solution. So what the young man out there had, he had a prospect who was in dreamland or hopeland. I dream or I hope. Now, you know, you can use the word problem land easy because you can say, you know, Walt Disney has what? Disneyland. He's got Fantasyland. And, you know, if you're not living in one of those, maybe you're living in problem land, and I'm here to help you. Over here, I just ran. You're going to get the full program when they, let's see, click to add title. That's nice. I learned, and maybe you did, because nobody here has been talking about prospecting, or I hadn't heard about it. I know I get half dozen calls a week for me to, do I need prospects? And I say, no, I don't. But I want to always keep close attention to a prospect, qualifying a suspect to a prospect. I want to be able to meet them on a favorable basis. I want to understand, I want to learn rapidly whether they have an unmet dollar need or want. I want to know that they have the ability to qualify for whatever product we may present to solve problem land. I want to know that they have an ability, maybe not a desire, but an ability to pay for the product. And I want them to have a sense of humor or a worldview that's in common with mine, because that means that instead of it being a transactional sale, that we have a first step on an engagement for a long-term relationship. So being in the business 46 years, I have people who, you know, I met and on a favorable basis. And when they started talking about, this goes back to 1974, the one I remember. When I found out that his tax return had a lot of revenue, he was in Rotary with me, but he'd have a cup of soup with me, a bowl of soup with me. And it turned out that I learned he'd been in the insurance business after getting out of the Air Force, so he knew about it. He had the bucks because he had a tax problem. He didn't know how to solve it, and he certainly had a sense of humor, because what he said, he had paid, I don't know, $90,000 of taxes the year before in a new business. And I said, if I could show you a way to reduce that by $40,000 or $50,000, would you be interested? He said, why, I might even buy some life insurance from you. So that was a type of sense of humor that I liked. And anyway, so just keep it in mind, because some of our hard cases, they're missing an element here. It's not that you can't sell them, but it's whatever. Now, the first part, I'm talking about my elevator talk. And some people heard it yesterday. And there are so few people here, don't ever try to reach me at these numbers, but I'll give you a sample. Take a page and mark it up and pass it back. But I don't know about you, but when I was new in the business, anybody here under 5 years in the business? Two of you. We might have guessed. Okay. So may I just ask you at this moment in your career, Taylor, what do you do? I'm John Lee. What do you do?
I work with financial services.
Okay. And, yeah, she's seen it before. Hi. You are?
Josh.
Yeah. Good to meet you.
She's just your wife.
She's just my wife. She is my wonderful wife, yes. Josh, what is it that you do?
I'm in finance. Can I help?
Okay, good. All right. Now, what I used to say, being exposed to MDRT influence even before I qualified, I would say, I sell insurance. I'm taking my batting pose, okay? I sell insurance. and the people would say to me, what's the first question you'd say? Pardon me?
I don't need any.
Well, that comes later. I was so young and innocent, they said to me, auto insurance? The ball went by, no. Strike one, the mighty Casey. All right, number two, what would they say to me? Homeowners, or maybe thinking that I was in a different marketplace. It was before I wore bow ties or had any facial hair. They'd say, you mean like corporate insurance? And I'd say, no, yes. Tools for financial listening. Thank you. No problem. We're not in problem land. We can't even see it. Okay. All right. So I'm getting to my elevator talk, okay? We got tall buildings in the east, so it's a big elevator. It's a little longer than the normal elevator talk, but I'll tell you why we got here. Second one, third one, the pitcher steps back two paces. He throws his fastball at me. Oh, you sell life insurance, which is the same as I got enough, I don't need any, I'm insurance poor, which we all have heard. And I said, this is not very effective. It's not allowing me to put my best foot forward. What is it that I do? So, Lorenzo asks me, we meet at a Chamber of Commerce, we meet at Rotary, what do you do? Lorenzo, hi. I sell people insurance. Do you know what that is?
No.
What did I do? It's interactive, it didn't stop. I got him involved, we're in a conversation. Well, you've answered as many people have. But briefly, I have clients, friends, who have dreams. They make plans, many types of plans, including financial plans. And when it gets to financial, they have four threats of economic loss. The first is that they can die too soon. Now, my clients, whether they're 25 or 75, feel any time is too soon. It's a problem. Okay. Richard. The second threat of economic loss is that you can live too long. How can you live too long? Pardon me? How can you live too long, Taylor? Outlive your money, outlive your income. That's the common answer. So what you're saying is if your money dies before you do, it's a problem. Third threat. Now, you got to step back because I'm going to come back to, you may not use the D word, okay? We're going to come back to the D word. But in answering this one, the third threat of economic loss is to suffer a living death. Okay? What does that mean to you, Richard? You just said you cannot use the D word. So what does suffering a living death mean without using the D word?
Being around and being dependent
on others. Okay. Anybody else?
It's a major illness.
A major illness? You know what somebody said to me? Is that like Christopher Reeve? Do you think that person understood what suffering a living death is? If they say, is it like being in a coma? Is it like suffering a major trauma? Okay, they're using their words, not ones I put in them. And no one uses the D word. People in home offices, and I'll come back to it. So we'll go on, elevator talk. It stopped at a few floors. The fourth threat, D word. You're healthy? You're working?
Yes.
You have an income?
Yes.
What happens if you're not healthy, not working, don't have an income? You're poor. It's a problem. Fourth threat, catastrophic health expenses. You see the turtle? You know, who's going to pay the doctor, the hospital, the ambulance, all those folks? And then people say, I've got group insurance, no problem. Somebody didn't get these. We'll just leave them out here. You're welcome. Okay, so I say at that moment, do you have a people insurance advisor, Lorenzo? Okay, well, would you like an objective, no obligation, sit down with a people insurance advisor? I offer that to you. It's real easy. And have I used the word insurance? Other than people insurance? No. What I've done is I've made them think of problems, issues, concerns. I've made them think of problem land, okay? Because that's where I want to deliver them from, right? into the land of promises and guarantees, which is what we represent, okay, with product. All right, let's come back to the D word. The D word is disability, disabled. When you hear that, what do you think? Who's it going to happen to? The other guy, somebody else. Home offices continue to use those words. Why do we use them? If it's going to turn somebody off, why use the word? Okay? I didn't know what word to use, so I invented the phrase, suffer a living death. It's funny, we are not death deniers, okay? It may make people uncomfortable, and as I said to the audience yesterday, when I used the word in Hong Kong, afterwards they came back to me that my talk was great, only no say die. Well, I say die a lot because in our language in the U.S., it's a sound bite, it's quick. In China, to get across the point of death. Rob, so I asked the K.K. Pao in 1991, after he told me, you tell a story instead of use the word die. I said, I like stories. I said, tell me the story. So he said, perhaps, Rob, you will take a trip away from your family, away from your home. You will go a long, long way. It will be many days, far, far away. And perhaps, Rob, you will not come home. So I said, what a wonderful story. But, you know, I can't see people who are getting all our TV stuff and everything. You know, everything is in sound bites. So you got to have a message that's appropriate to your culture, to your clients. But you need to speak in the most basic language. So if that worked for K.K. Pao, and he was top of the table at that time, if that worked for him, I would have people wondering whether I'd lost my marbles. Okay. Risk assessment. When is the best time for you to talk to people about their attitude towards risks? Is it?
Preferably before they're in the middle of the problem.
Bingo, yes, okay. So how do you communicate that to them? How do you ask them rather than tell them? And what I've done over the years, those of you, Melvin saw me yesterday doing my artwork, which is very basic. So what I start out with is my standard character. Put a face on him, he's got a little hair, and he is falling, okay? And so I ask the question, how good is your safety net? And I say, is this the best time to be checking out your safety net when you're falling? Or is a better time to be sitting down with a competent professional and stringing up lines of guarantees and protections and tying them together with contracts and agreements and policies and such wise so that when you come down, you're not going to hit the sharp and dangerous objects underneath, but rather come down into a hammock. All right, 1 minute, stupid, communicates. The time to do it is now. This is not a good time to be checking out your safety net. How good is your safety net? Let's do a little risk assessment. Silly? Does everybody have sufficient hand control to do a little drawing like that? I said it yesterday, when this is in my hand and I'm standing and there's a whiteboard and you're sitting, where are you? Where are you back to?
School.
Who had the answers? Who asked the questions?
Teacher.
It was an interactive experience. You were learning. If I'm not interactive, if I'm preaching, I lose my audience. That's why it's questions back and forth. Anytime you've got a question of me, hop in. If you've got a criticism, peer-to-peer, hop in. Tell me why it works, why it doesn't work, okay? That's how I've got the stuff. But it can work. So that's a tool to risk assessment. To how long has it been since you checked out your safety net, okay? And did I just talk about insurance here? No, you could, your retirement plan, your anything that you work on, because we all work in diverse practices, anything you work on can be tying this whole thing together. And it's the whole purpose is that when bad things happen to good people, what? That they are in at least the most comfort possible. Now, when I'm in my office, I have a conference room with a whiteboard. But I don't do everything in my office. I go out to where people have their business or their office. So Staples carries smaller whiteboards, a lot of dry erase markers. I use that. I carry my classroom out to offices. Needs selling. How many people use a computerized program to come up and show needs for insurance? Nobody anymore. How do you, anybody do any need selling anymore? Okay, good. How do you show it?
Yellow pad.
Yellow pad, good. Okay, I'll show you in a yellow pad way. Nothing wrong with a computer, for sure. Because back in the beginning, when we had to run our illustrations by hand, watching Sunday afternoon football, before we had illustration services, it wasn't a lot of fun, with a rate book. So what I have found sometimes, especially with young people trying to get across the concept of what we do, Quintone.
Yes.
Quinton.
Yes.
Okay, so Quinton and came into my office, and we're going to do a little preview of his life. So now, and I don't want you to give us your values, but make somebody up. It can go any way we want, okay? Okay, so what we're going to talk about, Quinton, is you, your life, your values. See where we are. So here we are. Okay, and may I assume you have a residence, Quinton?
Yes.
Okay, so what I normally do is I draw a nice little cottage, and to be consistent with yesterday, and Quinton, you have a picket fence?
Yes.
Okay. Well, usually they say no, but I said, well, you have one now. So again, it just, you know, it's kind of casual and fun, okay? And I'm guessing that you transport yourself in an automobile.
Yes.
Okay. So, you know, you can see why I don't get any credit here. Okay. Now, thank you. So these three things are part of your life. You've got yourself, you've got your home, you've got your car. Okay, so Quinton, on your automobile, approximately what's the value of your automobile?
$30,000.
Okay. You have any debt against it?
Yes.
Okay. How much debt?
$15,000.
Okay. And on your home, what would you guess the fair market value less the debt on it would leave you? And if you say underwater, that's a new one. So now, Quinton, what is your value, your human life value?
Priceless.
Okay. But if we had to put a number on it, for instance, if you were hit by a driver, died, what would your family, what would your attorney put on the value of your life? You have no idea, okay. Well, again, without getting into anything confidential, as I did yesterday, if you see, I use the hand. So put out your left hand and into your left. So in your left hand, put this year's income, next year's income, your income for every year that you think you're going to have to work, okay, out into the future. And when you stopped figuring that out, whatever adjustments for productivity and inflation, close your hand. Okay, is that a lot of money?
It is a lot of money.
Okay, and as I said yesterday, when you do that with people, a lot of times they will really get into it, okay, which is what you want to. Or he's not exactly white knuckle, so he doesn't think it's a lot of money, but he has a white little finger knuckle, a white knuckle there. And so would you give me a number? Okay, Now, I'm guessing that these things, that's a lot of value. These are major items. Do you have anything else that's of a more major value than what we've listed here?
Yes. Summer home.
Okay.
Toys.
Okay. More than this, but less than this.
Yes.
Okay. Now, in terms of protection, may I ask what you've set up as to protect the car? Is that fully protected, partially protected? What?
Comp, collision, and gap.
Okay. So what is unprotected?
Nothing.
Okay. So you're 100% of value. Not even a deductible?
Yes.
Okay. So maybe you're 95%? Okay. Up here. Your house protected?
Replacement value.
So what would you say? 100%? Okay. $2 million of life insurance on your life?
No.
Okay. What's the ratio of your life insurance to your value? Does anything there pop out at you? Okay. Maybe your property casualty agent's done a better job than your life insurance agent. Okay. Does it make sense to have your most significant value 50% protected by an insurance carrier and 50% self-insured while you're almost 100% insuring the rest with very little self-insurance? Okay. Does that make sense? Is it simple? Okay. And when I never thought of that, and if you've got a premium problem, perhaps the solution to this, but I'm overinsured, I've got no more money. Well, perhaps the issue is to find out how we can put a little more self-insurance into your less valuable assets so that you can find premium dollars to help solve the problem for your most valuable asset. Okay? It's conceptual, it's visual, it's just a conversation. You didn't feel... Okay. Well, I hadn't made that up 34 years ago, but that's about 20 years old. But I just found that, again, visual and oral and conversational, we're working on the same team, right? That's what you want to be. It's not a transaction. I'm selling you something. We're consulting together. You're telling me where it hurts, and we're finding a way to get there. And we're using logic all the time. Okay. Let's see. I'm sorry. Okay, we had the elevator talk. Oh, okay, you guys did not get it. Melvin got it. You guys didn't. I'm going to do a fast run through. It's 1:30. I'll come back to that. The D word. Oh, the D word, yeah. I touched on it. If you listen, people will tell you, suffer a living death. People will tell you where what they think is problem land for that. It has to do with money. It has to do with inability to earn money, right? But I found suffer a living death. You're alive, but you're occupationally dead. So what would that mean? Never, never, never surrender to the D word. Because what does our industry say about disability? Pardon me? Okay, that one I'm not familiar with. The one I'm familiar with is 1 in 3 persons will have a long-term disability in their career, defined as one that's 90 days or longer. They never tell you on average how long they run. And most people say 1 out of 3, that's a good bet. These two guys, not me. Or one of these guys, not me. Okay? And so statistics don't do it. But when you say healthy, working, have an income, what happens if you're not healthy, not working, don't have an income? And if you put it in, then you'll get, I'm got a problem. I don't know. I'd be broke. Be quiet and let them answer that question. Because all of a sudden, they realize they got a problem, an issue, or a concern. And can we come back to that? Would you like to come back to that? Because what I try to do initially is to find as many problems, issues, concerns if I'm having a first interview, because that's the waterfront. It probably means they haven't talked to somebody like me in a while. Okay. Let's see what else we got up here. All right. There's that wonderful hammock. My picture's lousy, but that's a great one where you can do your risk assessment. What's the best time to evaluate the safety net? What are the components of that net? And that's like Julian yesterday in his talk. He went over that tax return with a vacuum cleaner because, again, each line allowed you to get into one issue or another. Well, each of the lines in the hammock also allow you to, well, who does this? Who advises you on that? When's the last time you reviewed? But again, I'm looking at all the weaving of that whole net. And if you haven't been in a hammock in a while, try it. I did a lot of it this summer on the front porch. It was great. But what about a frayed line? Okay? Frayed line is what I started with. If you got a frayed line, let's repair it. Let's take care of it. Let's do a little bit of maintenance. Okay, you, your life, your values, we did it. Great question that I've used for years, roundtable question. How much are all your tomorrows worth? When Quentin answered the question, I did it by him putting his dollars in his hand, but I could have asked him that question because that's we are money on the hoof, right? We're finances on the hoof, and people don't think of themselves that way. So you need to point that out to them and see themselves in a different light. Okay. We'll do this, and we'll come back to. I'll go back here. All right. Again, Melvin, you can't answer this because you've seen it already. But I have a few left from yesterday afternoon, so I'll hand them out. I showed this up on the platform. Okay. It's $1,000 bill, somebody told me. Printed on the face of it is something about the value of money. Who can tell me what the value of money is? That's the most common answer. You'll get that from your prospect. It's not what I'm looking for. It's not the most real in terms of what it is that we do with people. So what might you say? Okay. What's the value of money to a widow after she's come home from burying her husband? It's what? The value of money. Richard, you want to read it? Okay. Is that what we're talking to people about all the time? Okay. So just as a reminder, there's nothing proprietary about this. Take one and pass them back, please. I'll give one. Take one and pass it back. You're welcome. Print them up. There's nothing on the back. That's not my address or phone number anymore. But it's a valuable note, and sometimes you can use something like that. You know, I don't know what your compliance people would say these days, but they don't come out to the field very often. This has nothing to do with equities. And I just am trying to get people to, I try to present things in different ways so that people can get out of the pattern of saying, I'm overinsured, I'm premium, I have no more premium. I try to get them out of their rut, out of their groove, so that they do something in a different way. So, what I think I'm going to do for you with the time available is give you a preview of, or a review of what we did yesterday in the afternoon, because I know people felt it was valuable, and we can tag on the last part of this, life and legacy, at the end. Okay. Okay. We're going to talk about, there's money out to you, right? So, I'm going to write the laws of money on the board. There are three of them. There's a fourth one we can talk about. I'm not going to show it today. Three of them, three laws of money. And when I do this, it's interactive. Laws of money. And taking an author's pride in it, I call them Lee's laws of money. But Rob could do it, and he can call it Perry's laws of money, and I'll never know the difference. And Quentin, you can do the same thing. Okay, so. Okay, got to have fun, okay? And people have fun with this. All right, toss the question out. In the back of the room, sir, your name is?
Roy.
Brilly?
Roy.
Roy, thank you. Roy, what are the, if I said there are two things that regularly and dependably produce a revenue stream, income, what would those two things be to you?
People at work and money at work.
God, he's been to the seminar before. Okay, people at work, money at work. All right, now, when you're talking, that's because we're in the business. We've heard this a lot, right? And so, you know, I don't do anything new. I just kind of repackage it and make it visual, all right? So because that, know that our prospects haven't seen any of this stuff before. So I do have the dysfunctional family, because I'll get people who will say, is that like getting money from the government? And, you know, before they give these to? Well, that's Uncle Sam. Okay. Is that like having inheriting money? That's Uncle Harry. Were you born with a silver spoon in your mouth? Can you get reborn that way? You know, you can have fun with some of these things, okay? Auntie Mame is marrying for money, okay? That can be expensive. I've got about 9 of them. Uncle Jacques, Mary Lou and I were out in Seattle. I did this at a breakfast table. What do you do? And we came to the laws of money at a B&B, and the person said, well, you can go find buried treasure. I said, thank you, we found a new one. That's Uncle Jacques. So, you know, the imagination of people of how they're going to find money when really what they ought to be looking at is these two. But you can have some fun. Everybody's answer is credible. It may not be on target. And that's why I put them over here in the dysfunctional family. Okay? I can win with a lottery ticket. Okay. Another one. You know, so we got a bunch of those. So it's not that their answer is wrong. It's just it's not on target. All right. First law. Taylor, can you read that? Person working. Time equals money. You've created money, right? Now, there's an economist. Nobel Prize winning economist, Paul Samuelson, who wrote lots of different series of textbooks when I was young and many years after. And he said there are only two things you can do with money. They each begin with S. Okay, and Taylor's answer was spend and save. Now, if I'd done that to the audience at large, as I did yesterday, you get some people saying save and spend, and some saying spend and save. Taylor happened to answer it the way 95% of the people whom I talk to answer it. Who says save and spend? People in our industry, because that's what we've been taught to do. So I say to Taylor, if you spend first and save second, how much do you save? He nods his head, none, next to none, less than none, you know. So those are the answers you get genuinely, or I get as genuinely asking this. And I said, Taylor, if instead of doing what you just told me, which is kind of grim, if we saved the percentage necessary to meet your living goals and objectives, if we did that first, put that in first place, okay, and spent second, put that in second place, you think that'd lead to a better way of life for you? Okay. Do you think we ought to take a look at what that might be? We're not going to do it now. We'll do it later. Okay. And the third question is, When you got the spending in second place, are you going to need any help, any advice from me on spending? No. I've offered that out. That usually gets a laugh from people because, you know, do you need any help spending? No, heck, our public has done so well on their own spending, they never need any help from us. But they do know, and I've just made a date with him by phrasing it that way. We'll get back to that, how to determine what percentage would be good. I haven't asked you a question yet. Let's see, Dean Bowen, can you do the second line here, if you can see it? Equals what? That's a symbol of money. Mountains of money, thank you. I have the advantage here, we don't have mountains near where I do this, but outside is this wonderful mountain. So it's mountains, Dean, or it's a molehill, depending on how much, how long, what the return is, right? And the return can be inflation adjusted, before tax, after tax. It's not critical. It's just those three elements. Okay, let's give him some eyes. Whoops. That's really a jolly eye there. Okay. Richard, do the last line for us, please. Money for you. And this person is? Happy person. That's the difference between when we start off. Put a smile on him. Okay. And he's happy, Richard, because he is financially. Notice I am waiting for a response.
Secure.
Whose answer was that? Was that Richard's answer?
Yes. Oh. Independent.
You don't like independent. Okay. Okay, it's not the right word for you.
Everybody.
Who would like to be financially independent?
Everybody.
Okay, but all right. Critical point. We're not grading value systems. We're trying to understand words that move people to understanding and to action. So if I put down financially secure. And all of us have to mention this. Yesterday, I got three responses. They're all ones I heard before. And someone younger said sound. Okay? So those three. Now, I don't know what those mean to you, but you'd better listen for it, what your prospect, what your conversationalist tells you. Because when you come back to show your alternative, your solution, your idea, it better be, I don't want to be telling Richard after what he has just said, and Richard, this will make you independent. Because he's going to close the door on me. So I got to remember, Richard said secure, and you said secure. But there were some other hands here that were independent. So I got to show how the planning we're doing strikes a chord with the word expressed, right? Okay. So this did not come down to me on a mountain, you know, on a couple of tablets, okay? This is a work over the years of what works, what doesn't work, and we add things on and whatever. Okay, now, the first law describes capital creation, because the most important thing that you decided to do, Taylor, was to save first, spend second, because otherwise there's no creation. Second law talks about capital accumulation, where the effort is placed on understanding your risk tolerance, diversifying fields of assets, and trying to plan for your goals. And the third is what we call capital conservation. Now, I have a fourth one. I didn't do it yesterday. And I didn't think we had time anyway, and we don't. But it was, I call it capital preservation. So if you have a sense that somebody is, you know, big time, tens of millions of dollars, then the game doesn't stop when they no longer are working. Because the question really here is, Richard, can you will the assets that you've created during your lifetime, which you're producing an income now that you're no longer working, or when you're no longer working, can you envision them lasting well beyond your lifetime and your wife's lifetime? Okay. When you got that, you're down to preservation. So that's more pictures. And one of them is we talk about, we got mountains of money, we got liquid lake, and what percent, how high are the mountains, how full is the lake, and then I draw some pictures from the lake up of lines down to a truck, which has on its side BSP, and on the door of the truck, US. And people say, well, what's that truck? And I said, well, BSP stands for Big Sucking Pump, okay? Because some of that liquid in your lake is going to get drained, maybe all of it. And then the government's going to come back. And it's just to paint the picture of what, it's not a 706. It's a big sucking pump. And people, again, the picture, it puts them in the mood to look at a 706 and to get into the facts. But it's a story. So we're not going into preservation today. But to get to problem land, how many people are equity people here? Sell equities as well as insurance? Okay. And when we were in the 90s, what was the comment from most of your equity people? Good times were here. Everything going up. Never going to go down. A lot of value there. And what I had trouble doing is to get people to understand where their values were, where their greatest value was. So again, as I did with Quentin, and let's see, again, your name, was it Josh? Okay, so Josh, would you stand up for a moment? I'd ask Josh if that was the picture. Josh, in which of those equations would you guess your largest financial values are? One, two, or three?
One.
Honesty, okay. But Josh, in the 90s, might have been so impressed with what was happening with his mutual funds and his 401k and everything, and maybe he inherited a little bit of money, and maybe you were 15 years older.
Born rich.
Born rich, okay. And you would have said two. And I got that a lot. So then I developed this. Josh, would you put out your left hand for a moment? Because it's important for both of us, if we're going to start working together, to know where to start, okay? So in your left hand, the same thing I said to Quinn, would you put this year's income, next year's income, income into the future as long as you're going to work? Then close your hand over it, hold it tight, it's a lot of money. Now in your right hand, I want you to put all of the things you own, housing, personal, commercial, things, stuff, financial assets, less debt. Put your hand over that, okay? Which hand is heavier? Okay, and he raised it, but he wanted to lower it too. So his left hand, and what I would say is exactly, for the guy who checked two off out of a matter of ego, at least I got him back to saying one was where his greatest financial values were. And why is that important? Thank you, Josh. Why is that important? Well, it's where we got to start, because if we start down here and we're talking about investments and we have overlooked the fact that what he's come to very quickly is to say that my human value of working and earning is greater than my assets today, and that therefore it calls us to focus on that and to review the need for life insurance, right? For income insurance. Okay, income protection insurance. Okay, any comments, questions? Is it something you think you can use? I am told I'm being taped, so you can, it's not a videotape, thank God. It's a audio tape, so if you forget any of the language or whatever, it's there, And, you know, you've had a chance to draw the pictures. Whatever you do, have fun. And the end of this is to say, we all do one-handed giving, right? What's one-handed giving? Do you know what I mean? We write a check, okay? We write lots of checks for good causes at the time we think they are. Two-handed giving is when you take off your bow tie, roll up your sleeves, and go involve yourself, engage yourself in a project for someone else. Charitable project, philanthropic project. And what I found when I get over here, the closer we get down to here and we find people where I ask that question, Quentin, the mountain of money is going to provide enough income for you and your wife for the rest of your life? Do you have any doubt that there's going to be anything left at the end of the line? If he's got no doubt, then we're probably into talking about where's the money going to go? To whom is it going to go? And I have a 77-year-old who last week said, my kids have enough. And we had a life insurance policy, permanent life insurance policy. What are we going to do with it? Okay. Well, what can I do with it? And I said, well, if you own it, if you die with it, what's the problem? It's in his estate. I can't tell you what the tax is going to be today, but it's going to be taxed. But if you let me talk with your CPA, let's see whether we can move it over, get your charitable deduction, and do some good with it. Now, do you have any charity in mind? No, but I'll think about it. Call him back a couple weeks later. Well, I'm thinking about this one, but I'm not sure. What can he do? He could give it to a donor advised fund. And as long as you're alive, the beneficiary could, in this case, be Ducks Unlimited, but he's going to be able to change it. If he doesn't like ducks anymore, he likes something else, he can change it during his lifetime, change the beneficiary, but meantime, get a current tax deduction. And the Million Dollar Roundtable Foundation has a global gift fund, and I've done a policy like that that goes to charity. So, and I've helped other clients do that too. One-handed giving, two-handed, philanthropic, flexible positioning for your future decisions, a life insurance policy, or a stream of gifts over time to get it out of your estate. People like tax deductions. And getting the family involved, okay? You don't have to create an endowment. But if we talk to people about average people, middle-of-the-road people, not generations done. But what we have done is we've created the turtle fund, okay? Slow and steady, contributions to it during my lifetime, life insurance policy at death. Mary Lou will, my wife, will succeed to making gifts after I'm no longer here for charitable reasons, and our sons after that will be successive heirs to making those contributions. So it's a way of getting family involved in decision making for others. Okay. Tools for financial listening. That's a quick review of what we do, how we do it. I hope it's been helpful. I'm here 5 minutes for Q&A, or just so you can get early to your next deal. We've had a lot of fun here in Utah. And thank you. You don't have to do it. You don't have to do that. Well, bow tie and a beard, people say, are you a law professor? No, but, you know. And then as somebody said to me, if you wear a pink shirt and a bow tie, then you either have to be very concerned with your, very self-assured with who you are, or you're just not aware. And I said, I'm self-assured. So, thank you. Yes? No, this is done. Somebody comes in to be we get a referral, okay? I'll go to this, okay? I'll say, maybe you'd like to know what we do. I have the turtles, so I'll show them. We typically do people insurance, And here's what that means. Die too soon, live too long, which gets us over into equities and all types of investment planning. Suffer a living death. If you're in the working population, we may talk about overhead expense, disability income, disability buyout, all those products. And if they're older, we're talking about long-term care, critical insurance, whatever. I try to talk about products the least, because that's not, people don't buy products. They buy solutions to problems. You got to get them to the problem first. You got to keep them in problem land so that they really want to get out of it. Okay, good. I use an agenda. I spoke about that yesterday. It's a single page. On the agenda, the first thing is recap, recapitulation. Very brief, targeted sentences, which says that I listened well to what you said last time. They get a sheet, I get a sheet. The second thing I have is problems, issues, concerns. And I use a bullet, 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 bullet. I try to have three, at least four, five problems, issues, concerns that I found. And then I'll say, now, what I heard you say is, this is a problem. And they'll say, no, that's not a problem. Okay, but you said this, tell me why it's not. And we'll usually survive three problems, issues, concerns. I'll ask them to prioritize. Now I got the priorities. The next section says alternatives, solutions, ideas. Nothing is there. It's air. Okay? Below that, it says other business. It says activity, action, timetable. So as we come up with things we need to do, those are actions. Things we need to do, based on what you're telling me, I need you to get me a census of your business. I need these documents. I need this tax return. Okay? So it's things for him to do as well as for me to do. Timetable. How rapidly should we work on this? Okay. Finally, other business. In the middle of things, I find sometimes people get a great idea. Their mind moves on to something, and they say, oh, can I talk about long-term care? Do you sell long-term care? And I want to go through this, so I go into other business. I said, may I put that idea respectfully in the parking lot? We're going to come back to it, okay? Because I want to listen to what concerns them. But I would like to move, as the teacher does, with the action plan, with the day's teaching points. And that's what comes out of this. I'm not a one-shot person. We're trying to engage a relationship. I told the guys at lunch, I got a call from the daughter of a 30-year client, a woman I've done whitewater paddling with and whatever, great lady, real estate broker, had some very difficult times in her life. Her daughter's husband is coming back from 6 years in prison. He, alcohol and a death. I don't think he was guilty, but the court did, so he spent 6 years there. And she's working for a health activity firm. And their medical insurance started, their renewal date was today. And this call came in last Thursday or Friday. And we need your help. And I said, I'm going to be away Thursday, Friday. I don't think I can help you. I'd like to, but I can't. And then little Angel said to me, Carrie, do you know whether your employer is happy with their agent or not? Oh, they're not happy with him at all. My mind changed. I said, can you get me an appointment on Monday or Tuesday? And I got one on Tuesday. I went in prepared with an agent of record change letter, because I've done business with Oxford. I know their products. I called up their manager. We reviewed the group, and I went in and had a 20-minute meeting, and the owner of the business was very happy to sign the agent of record letter. Let me know about who else in the business. They have maybe another 5 or 10 employees who are not on the group medical plan. So we're going to figure out how to put them in if we can. But he came in with his 3-year-old daughter. And I'm wondering whether he has any life insurance. And he rents 10,000 square feet. And in Westport, Connecticut, that ain't cheap. So where's the business? You know, I see lots of things. So yeah, I do one interview transaction to help you with your problem immediate, but there are, you know, four threats of economic loss will lead me to do the full circle. Thank you all.